May the 3rd, and we're going to move our agenda around a little bit to allow Representative Greenlick to get on with his work. We appreciate you being patient with us. We tried about three times to get this out for you. We will do it today, Mitch. So I'll call a work session on House Bill 2507, and I'm open to a motion.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, since I understand that we have already amended House Bill 2507, I will move that House Bill 2507 as amended, that we pass House Bill 2507 as amended and move it to the floor.
And rescind.
Oh, yes, that's why we're here. And rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means, which we do have permission to do.
All right. Representative Nolan moves that the House Bill 2507 as amended with the be moved to the House floor with the rescission from House Ways and Means.
And a due pass recommendation.
Do I hear any objections?
Mr. Chair, could I just make an observation?
Certainly.
And comment that the good representative who brought this bill to us probably should do some other reading than these mystery novels. There's some often good historical work out there that might, this is a good bill. This is something that I do appreciate is having brought to us. It could be a very significant problem, and we would be derelict if we didn't move this far. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bernhardt, did I see your hand up?
You did, but I will withdraw my prospective remarks.
Which probably should have been under discussion and not objections. But
yes, thank you, sir.
Do I hear any discussion? Hearing none, clerk will call a roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Blinn.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Girard.
Aye. Chair
Anderson.
Aye. The House Bill 2507, having received the constitutional majority, is adopted.
Carrier.
And would we like to have a carrier from Wonderful? Glad to have you do it. Thank you, Mitch. Yeah. Close the work session on 2507. Going to move to a consideration of request for bill drafting. This would be on House Bill 3612.
LC,
3612.
Mr. Chair. I would move that the House Environment Committee adopt House or LC 30, move LC 3612 as a committee bill for consideration.
All right. Do I hear any objections or discussion? We'll adopt that motion. All right. Next, we have a public hearing on House Bill 3328. I'll open the hearing on that bill. Thank you. All right. First of all, let's have Representative Brad Wood come forward. And Steve Cafori, why don't you come on up to you?
Mr. Chair, I have some other people I'd like to come by and talk.
That'd be fine.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt, state representative from House District 31, appearing before you this afternoon in support of House Bill 3328. This bill saves energy in state-owned or funded buildings. It saves taxpayer dollars and as a result provides an opportunity to develop workforce skills in the design and implementation of energy efficient technologies. The concept behind this bill is very simple. our State Department of Energy can save taxpayer money in a revenue-neutral manner, I'd point out, by auditing state-owned or funded buildings for opportunities to implement energy efficiencies. And then we use the installation of these energy and cost savings as an opportunity to educate and train workers in the area of energy-efficient construction practices and technologies. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions about the purpose or background of this bill. And short of that, I would suggest that Stephen Cafori make his presentation to the committee. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Gerard.
Good afternoon, Representative Witt. There's one portion of the bill that says appropriates monies from general fund to department for preparation of plan. There's no fiscal with the bill. Do you have any estimate of what that cost would be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grodd, you will see that I think there will be some amendments that will be forthcoming here that will be eliminating most all of the fiscal impact of this bill. So
it has arrived as you speak.
Very good. Late-breaking news.
Yes.
Excellent timing.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Cafori and David Bell and Dr. Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here today representing Johnson Controls. House Bill 3328 is an interesting example of symbiosis or synergy. What happened is that my client was looking for a vehicle. There was a vehicle to be had. I talked to Brad Witt, Representative Witt, and I said, you have a marvelous bill there, but it has a poison pill in it. And that poison pill is $100,000. And I think we can do what you want to do without spending any money at all.
Hey.
And we can eliminate that appropriations line and hopefully take the subsequent referral to Ways and Means off so this can go right to the floor and get passed. And we wanted to do a couple of other things for my client, and I'll tell you, in addition to taking out the subsequent referral to Ways and Means by eliminating, or hopefully taking that out by eliminating the cost, we also made some amendments to the bill which asks for the Department of Energy to come up with a plan. As it says right now, it comes up with a plan, and then 2 years from now it brings a plan back to the legislature. Our feeling is there's no reason to wait 2 years. The Department of Energy has a lot of expertise, a lot of people there that can help state agencies and school districts tomorrow by spreading their expertise. So what they find from looking at what can be done around the state in terms of energy conservation, they ought to be turning right away into recommendations to school districts and state agencies so we can begin implementation. And so I've taken out the area with the plan and coming back to the legislature and said it should go right to those agencies. The other thing that we did was to put in some amendments, particularly having to do with energy savings performance contracts, and I'll have David Bell from Johnson Controls tell you a little bit about that. The concept here is that our company and in other companies as well have figured that they can make money saving energy for clients, and they can make money in a way that is cost neutral to those agencies. As a matter of fact, in many cases can bring dollars back to the agency so that it will be revenue positive. It's really kind of an exciting concept. It's not a new one. We've already been doing some of this around the state, but we saw this bill as an opportunity to educate the legislature and more citizens about what the process is and about how we can expand these opportunities. And any time you can do something good for the folks, you can help a private business expand, you can train more people in jobs that are going to be well-paying and productive, and save, if not garner money for the public coffers, it seems to me like that kind of win-win that this legislature looks for a lot, not too often fails to find. So with that, I'd like to turn the microphone over to David Bell from Johnson Controls and tell you a little bit about one of the ways that This bill may be implemented, and that's through energy savings performance contracts.
Before you do, can I ask one question of you, Mr. Kapoor? It seems to me that this plan has been implemented in city and county buildings and some school districts, or have the school districts been kept out of it until now?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Harvey is here, sitting next to me, is from
Tiger Dwell,
about his experience there. I have a letter from Bill Kennemer, former state representative, who's now county commissioner in Clackamas County, telling me what's happening here. It's not new, but it's not nearly as widespread as it ought to be. And I think the opportunities are extraordinary for the state.
So this bill will just encompass pretty much anyone, state, county, city, school.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Hi, my name is David Bell. Thank you very much for having me today. I'm with Johnson Controls. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I prepared a very brief presentation to outline a couple of the big rocks when it comes to performance contracting, and I'll just hop right into it. A little bit about my organization. We've been around for quite some time. We're about 120 years old. We're in the Fortune 100, and we've been doing performance contracting rather aggressively in the United States for the last 40 or 50 years.
Excuse me a second. Now, how do we get the screen to the...
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You
can't do it?
Okay,
well,
we'll work around it.
All right.
I guess the big number there would be the third up from the bottom. At this particular front, we do about $2.2 billion in square feet with regard to facilities, operations, and maintenance throughout the country. And also, we have about $2.3 billion in performance guarantees in the U.S. at this time, meaning that we have guarantees in the public sector to the tune of 2.3. That's what we're on the hook for, as we've guaranteed energy savings to occur in various facilities throughout the U.S.
It's in
your book that you I've handed out. In a nutshell, performance contracting is a self-funded, guaranteed project that is fueled by the energy savings that we can create. So what we typically do is we'll go into cities or counties or schools, any places where we have decent-sized facilities, and we try to identify through an energy audit the inefficiencies that are costly. Many times, from a facility perspective, the budgets that are requested are just simply not fulfilled, as they just don't have the money for them. And so what is left is an awful lot of, whatever fixing that can occur will occur on a smaller budget. And the result of that is higher energy costs, a higher degree of repair and replacement requests. It's just plain more difficult to operate, and it's certainly very difficult to operate at an efficient level. So what we do is we go into places, we identify through this energy audit where these expenses are occurring, how sizable they are, and whether or not we can propose technical upgrades that eliminate those inefficiencies and lower the cost of operations. It's a pretty simple concept. The big difference between what we do and what anybody could do if they just simply did it themselves is that we guarantee the energy efficiencies remain constant over an extended period of time. So we take the risk out of implementing newer technology, as we're there to make sure that the high efficiency range is maintained and those cost savings are maintained to pay for the project.
Question. Who pays the capital costs?
The capital cost is paid by the contracting agency, whether it's done through municipal lease or a bond of some sort. We do financing in some cases when it's requested. It's not an area that we make any money on, but we do that to facilitate the deal. Many times, especially public contracting agencies, have an avenue of some sort to do that, whether they go out for bond or municipal lease.
And then question, who pays off the bond?
The bond is paid for through the savings that are generated, and it's paid for by the contracting agency. The contracting agency would manage their own finances.
So they get a smaller bill each month and use the difference to pay off the...
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The nuts and bolts of this are pretty simple, but the backbone is really the savings guarantee. This is really the area that I think that the public can win. It's one thing to implement energy savings measures. It's another thing to guarantee it for an extended period of time. So what happens if those savings are not realized? In my particular case, and in most of the cases of folks who work in this industry in the state of Oregon, we outline in our savings guarantee agreement that shortfalls are picked up by my company. So let's say, for instance, that we guaranteed that you were going to save a certain amount of BTUs in a given year, and you went over that. In a case like that, my organization would pay the contracting agency for the difference, and it would fix those energy conservation measures at no cost to the contracting agency. So really what we've done here is we've really taken all the risk out of this for that period of time. Heck, if it breaks, we pay for it. If it goes over consumption-wise what we said it would, we compensate you for the difference. So that's really that's the backbone of what the savings guarantee can do. It has those two components, and that's why it's valuable.
Question, how long are your contracts generally?
It really does depend on the organization. It also depends on the degree of inefficiencies that we found. The payback period can be 10 years. In some cases, it can be 20 years. I would think that the public would be interested in longer-term contracts simply for the fact that if there's a guarantee in place for high efficiency to be maintained for an extended period of time, that budget certainty, it'd be nice to have that extended, and to have it extended and guaranteed in a high efficiency range so that savings can be maintained for the full length. So these are the typical places that we try to find inefficiencies. Obviously, energy management is a big one, lighting, all the typical things that you might expect. In a nutshell, what we do is we look for anything that consumes energy at all. Could be water. Could be gas. If it consumes energy, that we're going to look there and find if there are inefficiencies, or if there are systems that are dated, or that they've been repaired in piecemeal throughout the last several years. Those are places we can typically find revenue that can be recovered. This is a sample cash flow as to what it looks like from a financial perspective. In this particular case, this is a $1.3 million project that extends for a 10-period term, and we've calculated in 1% of inflation. As you can see on the top line, we have a bond obligation of $155,000 per year for each of the 10 years. In this particular project, what we discovered was that we could create in year one, $150,000 of energy savings. We can recover that lost revenue. We also found $50,000 in operational savings. So the net on year one is $44,595. That money is above and beyond what they would have spent otherwise. And you can see as we've calculated in the 3% energy increases there, and we've spread that out over the 10 years, you can see how the total net savings comes out to 1.6. So basically, on a 10-year agreement, they spent $1.3 million, and at the conclusion of that contract, they will have saved 1.6 plus. That bottom graph really represents what we're calling 100. That would be the 100% cash neutral guarantee. The red bar on the left shows what their current operational savings are. The one on the right shows their new operational costs, which are lowered, and then their annual debt service. Now, this would be a purely cash neutral proposal. Our experience has been that's a very uncommon circumstance. What we typically find are that there's an awful lot more money to be saved ahead of cash neutral. And that's where the public can actually really win, because we are now creating a contract that retains more revenue than what they'd currently had in the past. This is just our resume for the Pacific Northwest, and you can see in the second column a lot of our clients, most of our clients, are percentage above 100%. In some places, they're saving as much as 150 and 200%. So these are all monies that are beyond what we proposed that they were going to save. One thing I would point out is that a very high percentage of the time, what we propose is not a cash neutral project. We propose something that's better than that. Typically, we come in figuring we can save anywhere from 15 to 25%, meaning if you spend $1 million last year, you're only going to have to spend $750,000 this year, and that includes your debt obligation. So they retained more revenue than what they were spending in years past. So if we calculate that and add it in there, 100% doesn't represent cash neutral. It actually represents cash positive. The amendments we're hoping to...
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Question?
I'm sorry.
No.
Can we go back to that chart?
Yes.
So you explained that you have a guarantee that your clients will achieve at least the savings that you estimate or forecast for them.
That's correct.
So let's take a look, for example, at Chowila School District, 89%.
Yes.
How do you write them a check?
Absolutely.
For the 11% that they're short?
Yes. Yes, we do. In fact, I'm not familiar with the circumstances of that particular account, but I can guess that what occurred was that for some reason the energy efficiencies were just not acquired. They were not achieved. So what the response that we would have to that is that we would write them a check for the difference that would meet the obligation that we had in the contract, and we would put people out there to make sure that the energy savings that we guaranteed them did actually occur in the next year. And if they didn't the next year, we'd write them another check.
Great. Thank you.
Certainly.
Staff question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had just a couple of questions, if I might. The first one was, have state agency contract administrators reviewed this proposed language that you want to add relating to performance contracts? Are they okay with it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hauser, we've shown this, and you have some people in the Department of Energy who are going to come and talk in a few minutes. We had shown this, some of this language that I'll talk about in a minute on page 13 and 14 to DAS and Department of Justice, and that was in another bill, 2214, and we were proposed amendments, and they said, no, those are substantive amendments, not technical amendments, and if 2214 was a technical amendment-only bill, they didn't object to any of the words we had to say. They just didn't want to make substantive changes in a bill that they were touting as being content-free, purely housekeeping. So we have heard no objections to the words we have.
Mr. Chair, if I might, another question. I noticed in the graph you had up there, there was an assumption of a constant rate of inflation with regard to the savings costs. Given that you're dealing in the energy arena and energy prices can bounce up and down significantly from year to year, how do your contracts address that? For example, if you get a 40% increase in natural gas prices in 1 year, How does this deal with that?
Certainly. That's a great question. Thank you for that. What energy savings contracting organizations guarantee is consumption of energy, not revenue. So what we would do is we would come in and we'd say, okay, well, you're consuming this much energy, and we're guaranteeing you that you're going to save X percentage of that. We're going to keep your energy consumption number to this number of BTUs. And clearly the only variable that we don't have control over is energy rates. However, I would point out that the percentage of savings is a constant. So if we're dealing with a contracting agency that has, let's say, a water problem, and we've lowered that, and we're able to guarantee that they're going to save X amount of BTUs, which would convert that to, and they went over that number, that's when we would... We wouldn't address the actual rate. We would address the consumption. But I would also point out that there are many places where we investigate for energy savings, and we find that rate negotiation is a possibility also. So we are able to work to some degree with rates, but just not guaranteeing them over a long period of time.
It's one of your listed spectrum.
Thank you. With regard to the amendments that we're hoping to include in 3328, the first really is in addition to the definition of energy conservation measure. Primarily the reason for this addition is
if
that...
If I should interrupt, this, you'll find this on page 2 and 3 on the dash 1 amendments. And the important part is the... on lines 9 through 11 on page 3.
Okay. The first addition we'd care to make would be with regard to the definition of energy conservation measure. We'd like to include natural resources in that category. I'd like to explain that. One of the areas that performance contracting can be especially beneficial in the public sector is in the examination of water distribution systems. The actual water meters themselves degrade over a fairly quick period of time. Within 10 years, they've gone, let's say, from 98% to sometimes 90% and lower. And that represents lost revenue for that city or that county. There are additional places in that whole distribution system where water loss can occur, but that's a source of energy conservation that, if it's retained, can have a positive financial impact to the city or the county or the water district or the water authority or whomever we're dealing with. The reason I bring this particular matter to the attention of 3328 is purely by the fact that we've run into some places in other states in the country where that's been called into question, whether or not energy conservation measure could include water or not. And to just have it included at this particular point would seem prudent. The second section refers to the parameters of what a performance contract actually is. What this addition would do is that it would make.
Excuse me. You'll find this on page 13 and 14.
Section 10.
Yes.
Thank you.
What this particular addition would do is it would simply define that performance contracts must be self-funded over the duration of the contract period, meaning that it's got to be at least cash neutral. It has to pay for itself. Secondly, another section of addition there would place the obligation and the guarantee associated with what we're calling energy conservation measures purely at the foot of the ESCO, the Energy Savings Contracting Organization, meaning my organization is responsible for the energy conservation measures that I provided to you in a contract. Rather than my subcontracting it out to somebody else, I'm responsible for making good on those energy conservation measures and making sure that they perform at that high efficiency level that we've been contracted for. It just simply makes us more responsible. And then lastly, there's an addition in there that gives contracting agencies flexibility in what they would require to have a fulfilling contract. Examples of this are in that they could say that, well, we'd prefer that this energy savings performance contract meet the obligations of the governor's statement to reduce energy conservation or energy consumption by 20% within the next 10 years. Or they could put into there that they'd like energy baseline studies conducted on a regular basis so that they could determine for themselves where their consumption is at. And there are several additions in there that are along these lines. And those really are the additions we care to put into 3328.
I need to explain something at this point, and that is you may be wondering why we're putting...
I'm sorry, question. Question?
Representative Lynn. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know any other company doing the same thing what you are doing? What this bill just creating, even though it's not specified your company, but mostly for your company?
Are you asking me if there are other energy savings contracting
organizations? Yes, something like this one.
Yes, there are. Siemens is an organization in the state. They can do this. Honeywell can do this. There are a number of ESCOs in the state that can do this. What this is about and what this is focused on is further defining what a performance contract is. And it's important because there is a lot of fear out there and when it comes to something that's a little bit outside of the box. This is relatively new in state government just in general. And in the state of Oregon, we're really starting to get some traction lately. But because it's a little bit different and because it looks at an extended period of time, it's met with a lot of skepticism. And there's just plain fear that in the end that they're going to have a legal or a financial risk that they didn't see coming. And what this does is it means at the get-go that when these contracts are proposed, they have to be self-funded. There's no way around it. I can't give you a performance contract that in the end will cost you more than what we've guaranteed you in terms of energy consumption. In that measure, there's a certain degree of protection. Secondly, the fact that I would be obligated to make those energy conservation measures work is an action of protection. My motivation to make sure that these energy conservation measures occur is a strong one. I need to make sure that my clients at any particular point are happy, whether it's a school district or a county or a state agency. However, if I subcontract that obligation out, the motivation by that particular group would be to repair what they could at the lowest possible cost. And we maintain that that's not the best solution for the public.
I need to explain at this point that the reason we've gone to all this trouble to talk about energy savings performance contracts is because in another part of the statute, in the statutes that have to do with procurement, government procurement laws, it talks about basically that the rule is government procures by lowest bid. And we are an exemption. They're an exemption in the statutes from the low bid requirements for energy savings performance contracts. So what we have here is a give and take. In one hand, we're exempt from the statutes that said you have to low bid so you can do a negotiated contract. And then in exchange for that, there are some pretty stiff guarantees that the person you're going to be contracting with has to meet certain standards. So why do we don't want a low bid? That's exactly the reason you just said. If we're going to be guaranteeing, we want to make sure that we're the ones who are doing the work. And we want to make sure that we're the ones who are from the beginning to the end. We want to do the audits. We want to do the design. We want to do the construction and the maintenance. Because if somebody else comes in later and does that, especially on a low bid basis, we might find that we're responsible on the hook financially for somebody else's efforts. So that's the trade that exists in this game.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Question, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those lines, Mr. Kapori, not having read the amendment, maybe you can answer my question for me. Is there anything in here that would preclude a public agency who wants to undertake this kind of activity from conducting a request for qualifications review or a qualitative competition among potential businesses, not that would include Johnson Controls, but might include some of the other competitors?
Yeah, that's a fair question. The answer is that the way the statute works with the exemption from the competitive bidding process, it leaves it totally up to the agency. So the agency, they could... We have this happen frequently. We go in and we talk to an agency and say, well, look what we can do for us, and say, will you do an audit? And we go and sit around and say, well, we'd like to fix this. No, we don't want to do that, but we'd like to fix this. Okay, let's fix that. And we negotiate a contract and carry it out. Other agencies may want to say, well, I think there are 3-4 people who can do this, so I want 3-4 people to come in and talk to me about their approach, their experience, how much money do they have in terms of backing up to be able to guarantee this guarantee. Does their chemistry of their folks feel like it works for the chemistry of our people? Those kind of questions you might want to ask. They could low bid it out if they want. It's purely up to the agency to decide its own process.
A quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've partially answered my follow-up question because you say that it is discretionary for the agency to decide that they want to go to a low bidder. I presume that means that they can consider, among other factors, their cash output to participate in one of these things. More broadly, I'm interested in knowing whether there's anything that would, whether they'd be allowed to to not only look at the qualifications and the financial solvency of the proposers, but also at the extended long-term savings and do a comparison and give preference to that proposer who gives them the best long-term savings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, they could if they want. It's very difficult to do in this game. If we think about it, the way it works is we spend a team of people into a facility, and one person will be looking at the water meters, and someone else will be checking the light fixtures, and someone else will be doing the HVAC. And then we come in, we come back and say, well, here's the, what we've found. There's 50 different factors. There's 75 different factors that we can work on. And this one will take you 10 years to recover your costs. This one will take you 3 years to recover your costs. And we'll put this into a package.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to try and competitively bid that out doesn't really work. Theoretically, I guess it could be done, but the only way it works in reality is to do it.
Let me respond to that a little bit. My name is Randy Harvey. I'm the Director of Operations, Human Resources, and a whole lot of other things at the Tigard-Tualatin School District. We have had we're embarking on our third performance contract. Our first was in 1996. It was a $1.3 million project upgrading three of our schools, improving the HVAC systems that were failing and the controls and so on. That was $1.3 million of direct savings to our district in zero cost to us, but $1.3 million in benefit to the improvement of our facilities. Our second contract, performance contract, was $3.2 million, and that involved the improvement of four schools. Again, $3.2 million that we didn't have in the year 2000. We all know that schools are more than adequately funded these days in Oregon. That is a zero-sum cost to us as a district to do that $3.2 million. Representative Nolan, you were asking about could we do competitive bidding, and Mr. Kafori was talking a little bit about that process. The process of coming in and doing a comprehensive analysis of a school district our size for these three buildings that we most recently did was about a $75,000 cost to come in and look at each HVAC piece of equipment, to look at all of the utilities, all of the connections that operate those systems. It's very expensive. The likelihood that three separate contractors are going to come in and each spend $75,000 in order to bid on a performance contract that they may or may not get is not very high. One of the things that we've done in the Tigard-Tualatin School District is take a little bit different view about how we handle our operations and equipment use in terms of looking for partners that we can partner with over the long term. I mean, schools have, by their very nature and funding, have a problem with finances in that we're on two-year cycles to know whether or not we're going to operate or we're going to have money or we're going to lay people off. In schools, and rightly so, our dollars are spent on children first, facilities and equipment second. So as I manage the maintenance operations department, I have seen over, well, since 1995, the best funded school district in the state down to what we call barely funded these days. So we have been able to bring, so far, seven of our schools up to near state-of-the-art operation in HVAC, heating, cooling. This last contract that we did in 2000 included security. We were able to fund upgrading our security system with four of our schools, including our new schools, by using the performance contracting. One other issue that I would talk about in terms of the importance of this amendment to the statute is that we are a large district. We're the ninth largest district in the state. We have the resources to go in and to have our legal beagles go in and analyze the statute, and we're willing to take the risk when there's a lack of clarity in the statute. In this case, when we did our first performance contract, it was something that was not being done in the state. And the statute was not real clear. And there were even disagreements down in Salem on what we could do. I know that's surprising to all of you. So we foraged ahead, or we forced our way ahead, and we benefited. The 13,000 students in the Tigard-Tualatin School District benefited from that $1.3 million that we were able to add to our budget. And as resources continue to shrink, it's important that we have this in our arsenal of things that we can do to improve the quality of the environment. I would just say one other thing. A child in a classroom who's too hot or too cold or has too much carbon dioxide in the classroom doesn't learn. And so our mission from the Maintenance Operations Department, the Tigard School District, our motto is good enough is not enough. We have to be proud of the job that we do every day for kids. So in this way, performance contracting has been a great boon to the Tigard-Tualatin School District in the sense that we have developed a relationship. It just so happens that our relationship with Johnson Controls, that has been very beneficial to our district. We're in the process of looking at a new contract. All told, we will have brought about $7 million worth of improvements into the district at zero cost to the taxpayer. And in these economic times, that's a very positive thing for us to do.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A couple of questions. First, does Johnson do any work with the private sector? And if so, why we're not, I didn't see any reference to clients in the private sector.
I believe we do work with the private sector. I personally am not charged with that. We do a lot of work in hospitals,
here. I just didn't bring that list with me. I brought only my government client list.
I would think that might be
wrong. Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
But as a hospital, I see Alan Moore Hospital, but I don't know whether that's public. I don't know whether it's the Sisters of Providence or you know.
Our team.
Is. But be that as it may, curious about what you do in the private sector and. What type of clients that you might have, but another question that I would have, and I think you were touching on it a moment ago, but in light of the fact that the Tualatin School District is currently using this service, and of course I have no way of knowing at this juncture. What other school districts or state offices or state agencies around the state might be utilizing this type of service? What do we need if we're already doing it, what do we need a bill for?
Let me respond to that first from a school district perspective, and these gentlemen I'm sure will have a perspective as well. When we in 1996 looked at performance contracting, the state of the statute is very murky. And what happens is the smaller school districts, and I've been a school administrator in school districts as small as McKinsey with 350 students, if the statute is not clear and understandable, then the door is left open for contractors to come in and say, well, you can't do that. I'll sue you. And what happens is instead of going forward, spending the dollars to get a legal opinion and understand what the school district's rights are, they just throw their hands up and go on doing what they've been doing. And so Low Buck Chuck comes in and puts in a system that works immediately when it's installed, and 3 years later it's not operating to peak efficiency. My experience in the last 28 years as a school administrator and dealing with facilities is that school districts generally don't spend a lot of money on their facilities to keep them up and operating. And when they put heating, cooling equipment, they put lighting equipment into schools, they put in the cheapest equipment that they can so they can get more bang out of their buck in the bonding process. But the operating costs of those systems that they're putting in are very expensive. And so when you look at the long-term costs of that equipment, it's costing school districts more in the long term, taking a bigger percentage of their annual budget to maintain something that was cheap when they put it in. That turns out to be very expensive in the long haul. These performance contracts for Tiger Tualatin School District has allowed us to go back in those low budget systems that have been put in to upgrade them, get them operating at a higher efficiency level, at a higher quality learning environment for students, and that's very important to us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the other thing is that the underlying bill, you have to realize we're hopping on Representative Wood's bill here. The underlying bill gets the Department of Energy involved in the game. Right now, it's up to us and our sales team to go out and let people know. Well, there's a whole lot of school districts and a whole lot of state agency buildings and facilities around this state. And if this is as important as we think it is as a policy issue for the state of Oregon, then we think it appropriate, Representative Witt thinks it appropriate, we agreed with him, that the Department of Energy should be involved in sharing the good news. And that's what the underlying bill does.
Well, I just wondered if further to add.
No, I don't think I had anything further.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just some comments on this. I'm familiar with the industry. I know it's been around for some time, and in part the reason for my inquiry about the private sector, and I know some private sectors are using I don't know whether it's, Johnson or specifically who it may be, some of the Tualatin School District's comments might be illuminated by what one would find or hear coming out of the private sector, since there's some sometimes a slightly different perspective on initial construction and maintenance, repair, and you know, what have you. But I am aware of the these efforts being made, and I'd be interested when we get to the Department of Energy and some of their discussions on it. But I'm not real sure, having said all of this, while I kind of, you know, like and appreciate the ideas, I'm not real sure that the State of Oregon, being an advertising agency for Johnson or anyone else, is necessarily within the purview of what I perceive our job to be. I would see that as a marketing sort of thing for the company. But I am pretty well, like I say, familiar with it, and I recognize that there are some incredible savings, and I have some difficulty understanding why, as long as this service is around, that any large consumer of natural resource / energy, you know, has not already been involved and sought out the services of the firms like this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, a couple of comments. First of all, private industry never is under restrictions about required to use low bid processes. They don't have to do that, and so we don't need a law to allow them to do what they want. But the public has been under these restrictions about the selection processes for products and services they procure, and that's why there needs to be something for the public. I will say also, I think it is the responsibility of the Department of Energy. That's why one of the reasons we have a Department of Energy is to assist state agencies and local governments in bringing information to them that they may not have. Now, that if they want to hire us or hire somebody else or not do anything at all, that's fine. But I think that having an agency that brings this information to people, and not just energy saving performance contracts, but lots of other kinds of programs. There are lots and lots of programs, you know, out there for energy saving, and the bill talks about other kinds of savings. I think you ought to ask them about what else they have been doing and will be doing under the bill. But I think it expands what they're doing in terms of assisting the general area of energy conservation. Also, I have something I'll send you. I just received an email today from some government magazine that has to do with government procuring, and it talks about this concept generally of working, as Dr. Harvey was saying, with a company over a longer period of time in the area of products as well in the area of services. And this is a new arena for the public, but this is something been going on in the private sector for a long time. So what we're trying to do is to bring the efficiencies that have been used in the private sector to the public sector, and I think this is what we've all been looking for.
And I would just second what Mr. Kafori is saying. In the Tigard-Tualatin School District, we have sought out vendors to develop long-term relationships with them in our floor care products, in our just the full array of all of the products that we use in schools, to develop long-term contracts based on the specifications that we give them, and everything from carpet to floor tile to toilet paper and paper towels and so on. And as part of that contracting relationship with them, build in training for our employees so that we're taking a more active role in training our own employees to take care of the equipment and monitor its efficiency and so on. The true benefit of the long-term contracting for a school district is we know what our budget is going to be within a very narrow range. We have our energy costs locked in for 10 years within a very narrow range. That makes it a whole lot easier when we get ready to decide how many teachers we're going to need, that we're not draining off resources to pay for things that are not directly in line with our mission of educating students. This whole concept comes out of the private sector. It's only now finding its way into education.
Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have questions in a couple of different areas, if I may.
Sure.
Thank you. First, I want to ask the administrator from Tualatin. I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Randy.
Sarcasm quotes don't work well in this building. And I assume when you said early on that the school district was well-funded, that you intended to have sarcasm quotes around that phrase.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now the real questions I want to ask. What
in this bill, if anything, or in the existing law, if anything, is there that really tells us what companies qualify? Now, are there requirements are there capitalization requirements or bonding requirements or insurance requirements or something like that that will guarantee the contracting agency that the company is going to be around to perform 8 or 10 years from now? What do we have that covers us in that respect, either in the bill or in the existing law that you know about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, there is nothing. This is something that is up to the discretion of the local agency, and the issue that Representative Nolan was raising earlier about taking a look at various proposals from various companies and scrutinizing those is important in this game, as when local governments or state agencies purchase anything or services or goods from anybody.
Well, the reason I ask the question, Mr. Chair, is it occurs to me that it's even more significant in this area than it would be in the area where we're doing a job that's going to be done over a period of 6 or 8 months or a year, because we're buying into a relationship for a decade or 2 decades or however long. Next question, unless you have something to add to that.
I just wanted to point out that item B up there, I think, addresses in part what you're discussing, and that is making sure that before the performance contract really can even be entertained, that the ESCO, or the Energy Savings Contracting Organization, be prepared to take on that obligation and be prepared to prove to the contracting agency that they will in fact be around to make sure that those energy conservation measures are achieved.
Okay. Now, I'd like to ask a question about the bill. It's not a follow-up, it's a different topic, if I may. Thank you. I've been trying to absorb this rather long bill in just a few minutes, and so pardon me if I don't quite get it. But I want to make some statements about what I think the bill does, and I want you to either say yeah or correct me, if you would. I'm looking on page 2 at the bottom, where the existing law defines what an energy savings performance contract is. And then we've added new language, which defines a number of things, energy conservation measure and natural resource, which I presume are used later in Section 10 as we go into this. And now, before I go on, what I want to understand about this piece of it is this an attempt to further define what an energy saving performance contract is and to limit the definition of that contract?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. So this actually further puts restrictions around the existing law, makes it more specific and less general, I could say.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, it does both. It does that to one extent. At the same time, it also expands in the area of natural resources. Present law does not include water conservation as part of energy savings contract performance.
Okay. But the other part, the sub-A part, actually makes it more specific and more restrictive in the sense that it's more specific. All right. Now, if I may, Mr. Chair, the other part of my question in this area is on page... Oh, no, I've lost track of it. Yeah, no, I haven't either. On page 13, section 10, page 14, and then page... I guess that's the end of it. as I read this material, page and a quarter here, this sets forth in fair detail... the various conditions that have to be met in a energy savings performance contract that are not required under current law, that in effect place more limitations on these kinds of contracts. Conditions: before the end of the contract, the agency must recover the cost of the contract. Contain a condition that the contractor shall provide for the first party guarantee of the energy conservation measure, and so forth. Yeah, and then it goes on to define in subsection 3 a variety of conditions that the contractor has to meet. Now, the way I read this whole section, this whole page and a half here, is that this adds additional specificity and restriction on the nature of these kinds of contracts that existing state law do not contain. Is that a fair reading of it, or have I missed it somehow?
If I might, yes, sir. It does do that. The reason that it does that is that there is a perceived risk by contracting agencies that we've spoke to that this is a very central objection that they have. What guarantees do they have for me as an energy savings contracting organization that I will be here in year 10 or year 12 on, let's say, a 20-year commitment? So that's definitely a fear that we've run into. Another fear is that that the energy conservation measures that we propose aren't going to be items that we are particularly responsible for in a first-party sense. That's a very big concern for people who are investing millions of dollars with an organization that's promising them that they're going to be saving money generated through an energy savings project. So the definition, you're correct, sir. It does further define it, and it defines it in a way that we feel is going to let contracting agencies in the state of Oregon feel a little bit more positive about engaging in these contracts, because they frankly make us more responsible.
From a school district sense, we highly endorse that aspect of this bill, primarily because a lot of the school districts that are going to be dealing with these kinds of issues in the district are not as sophisticated as some of the larger districts. This guarantees under the statute that this company is going to meet these particular criteria and guarantee a level of return that provides a benefit to taxpayers. There, it's going to be a zero cost to taxpayers.
Well, now this is a follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair. But doesn't it also help us to provide our oversight function by limiting what state agencies, school districts, etc., are able to do under the rubric of energy savings performance contract?
I'm not really clear on what you're asking.
We've been talking about, I mean, you've been in your answer to my question, you keep saying, well, this defines it more clearly, this makes districts more comfortable with it. And I can understand why that would be true. Looking at it from the legislature's point of view, I think that one of the things it does in the process of defining with more precision what the words energy saving performance contract mean, that we are actually in this way limiting what those words might mean, and therefore performing our oversight function in the process of dealing with this area of public contracting law.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think you are right to an extent that it allows us being the government legislature to perform that function. But I also want to warn you that if you look at line 5 on page 14, the word may is there rather than shall. So this is more of a guideline than a mandate.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, staff question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, are the conditions and requirements of Section 10, do they generally reflect how your particular company approaches these types of contracts, or are most contracts written by any ESCO likely to address these particular issues? In other words, would another company be comfortable with these requirements, or do they reflect simply how you do business?
To my knowledge, this is the way that energy savings performance contracts are done. The issue here is that the way that the law is written, it's just very difficult for contracting agencies to have a lot of confidence in delivering on what we're saying we're going to deliver on, simply because it's not laid out very clearly within the statutes.
Mr. Anderson, Mr. Hauser, I wish I could design something that nobody else could do inadvertently and that you wouldn't know about, sub rosa, I should say, and then design a bill that gives my clients a lot of money and nobody else any, but we didn't do that. Good question, though. I'm glad you asked.
Maybe Dr. Harvey would want to address this. Have you, in getting the funds that you needed for any of your programs, ever used the state energy programs, energy trust, or any of
them? We used 1149. Is that in regards to your question? Mm-hmm. We're using the benefit of Senate Bill 1149 funds. Current project that we're doing or taking to our school board for approval, the $2.4 million, will use a considerable amount of the $1149. Mm-hmm. It's been extremely beneficial to our district in terms of upgrading our
facilities and improving them.
And at a good interest rate.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I might draw your attention to the letter you have in front of you from Clackamas County, Bill Kennemer. He mentions in the second paragraph there that they were awarded $47,000 from the Energy Trust on their project there in this building. So I think the answer to your question is yes. And if I might just draw your attention to that paragraph where they talk about the benefits to Clackamas County from using an energy savings performance contract.
Great. Question from Representative Jensen, then Representative Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Section 8, page 3, first uppercase B, natural resource. Where is this used? Where does that term appear in this paragraph?
Mr. Chair, natural resource defined lines 9 through 11 on page 3. If you look up above that in line 6, line 5 and 6, where it describes energy conservation measure, it talks about reclamation of natural resources, and then later it defines what natural resources are.
Okay, thank you.
That answers it.
It's what happens when you don't get an amendment until just that day. And
yeah, I know.
Read through
yeah.
in a hurry.
Yeah, thank you.
That answers it. That also answers my question, Mr. Chair. If I may, I'd like to make a comment.
Certainly.
I wanted to agree with Mr. Cafori about the juxtaposition of these two issues, the original bill and then this new piece. It makes a lot of sense to me that the Energy Department would be given some overall responsibility to investigate cost-effective means of reducing the peak energy consumption and overall energy use in state-owned and state-furnished buildings and so forth, and that they sort of be the bird dog that kind of lets people know that maybe they ought to look into this stuff and make some plans, and tie that at the same time with a fairly complete statement of how an agency or a school district or a city government or somebody like that could go about it. I know in my district there are a number of small municipal agencies that by no means could they devise this kind of thing themselves, and having this kind of specificity in there gives them an outline for what they should be looking for and doing. And I wish we had more time to look at it, but I'll tell you my initial impression is fairly positive.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just comment on the statement that Representative Barnard made. One of the things that these performance contractees has enabled us to do in our district is to centralize our controls of our high-cost energy systems so that now we can control from a central location in our district the heating, air conditioning, and all of the facilities, operate them off of peak hours so we get maximum savings on energy costs. And it's just been a tremendous benefit. We could have never accomplished that without the performance contracting, because we wouldn't have put $7 million in these economic times into, you know, heating and cooling facilities. So I would also comment that we did get are anticipating $175,000 Betsy credit in our latest proposal for performance contracting.
I thank you very much. I think probably this is just the logical extension of what we're seeing, or maybe it's working the other way around with the energy-efficient homes that are being planned for good energy usage, insulation as well as electrical and gas and all of the different energy needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate each one of you coming. I call Larry Gray from ODE.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm Larry Gray, an assistant director with the Oregon Department of Energy, and we are here today to support House Bill 3328 and support the concept of this bill. We're we're in favor of anything that will help us in our job of encouraging public agencies of all stripes to adopt energy efficiency measures and renewable energy measures. The bill is a good start. There are some amendments that we think are needed. We have not seen the LC draft that you have in front of you, and we intend to work with the parties to craft amendments that will achieve what we think this bill is intended to achieve. And with that, that concludes my testimony. Are there any questions? I'd be happy to try to answer.
Yes. Representative Bloom. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Do they require any bondings from the state when they do the subject, when they do the work?
Are you referring to the energy savings performance
energy saving
contract?
Programs, yes, contract.
I'm not sure of that, and for an answer to that question, Mr. Chair, Senator, Representative Liu, I'm going to ask Betty Merrill, who is manager of our Buildings and Technologies section in the agency, Oregon Department of Energy, to answer that question. Betty has worked extensively on energy savings.
Mr. Chair, Rep. Lim, in every one of the...
State your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Betty Merrill from the Oregon Department of Energy. In every contract for performance contracting in the state, when they issue their request for proposals, they do require that the contractor provide a bond.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I just ask Mr. Gray, are you in close proximity on projects like this with the Department of Administrative Services? Would you be contacting them, working with them, or do they stand alone and work apart?
Mr. Chair, we work with Department of Administrative Services on projects of this sort. We have a role in facilitating energy savings performance contracts, particularly for state agencies, and we have had a role in working with DAS and Department of Justice to establish the standards for energy savings performance contracts that are issued for state agencies.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions?
One more question.
Representative Lim.
Okay. To your knowledge, how many companies are eligible or qualified to have this kind of a contract in our state?
We currently have about 6 companies in the state who are performing as energy savings performance contractors. The Oregon Department of Energy has a list on our website of qualified auditors for our schools program. Those auditors can be used by schools and public agencies, and all of the ESCOs in Oregon are on that list.
Okay. More questions? In this program, where the savings mostly coming from? Coming from electricity or natural gas or oil or the water? What's all of it combined together? Where are the most savings coming from?
Mr. Chair, Referent, the savings come from all of the fuel sources, and they do include electricity, natural gas, fuel oil or diesel, if a facility used that. Water savings would be counted.
All right. And follow up, Mr. Chair. When they do have a contract, how many pages a contract usually? Is that big or small or so complicated? Just want to get some idea.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, currently the contracts that are going through the state process that's been developed are actually a 3-part contract, and it's probably an inch.
Yeah, right. That's very complicated to me. And could follow one more question.
One more follow-up?
When they have an energy saving contract, the company might be asking to the, in case if it's a school, the mandate certain things, you got to do this to save that. Is that a very cumbersome issue, or
when they have a contract completed, that will save just in the normal uses, just to save it automatically? Or do they require you need to, you know, turn off the electricity when you are not? Of course, you are doing it anyway, but enforcing more, or just automatic turn off things, or things like that. Do they require that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bloom, depends on the particular contract. I think what you're talking about with turning off lights is what we call behavioral. You can also control those with switching or with automatic controls. The idea with performance contracting is that you try to do a comprehensive view of a building as opposed to just the low-cost, no-cost measures.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Could you tell me if you mentioned administrative rules, are any of these contract standards already listed in the administrative rules?
Mr. Chair, last session there was legislation to facilitate performance contracting, and some of those, some language from 279 was in HB 2214 this session.
There would be a need, though, to for this bill.
I think with regard to the rules, we need to have DAS look at them from DOJ.
Great. All right. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Let me call Patrick Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I apologize for my signy die wear. I didn't know that this hearing would be held today, so I don't have my... So please forgive that. I'll keep my remarks short. My name's Patrick Green. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO, and I'd just like to bookend the comments that Representative Witt made on the front end of this hearing, and that's about the win-win-win that comes from this from House Bill 3328. One of the reasons Oregon, a lot of Oregon's key industries have been built around low-cost power. Energy is has been very important to our state. Low-cost power from BPA helped develop our manufacturing. Low-cost power helped attract high tech here. You know, one of the ways that we can help preserve that is to look to the 21st century with focusing on clean, efficient, and renewable energy. Ways that we can do that in terms of saving energy. And it envisions an Oregon that not only invests in energy efficiency, but helps to train the workforce, look to train to work the workforce through that. And right now, older buildings with older technologies bleed taxpayer money. Old air conditioning systems, old heating, those things bleed energy out into the air, waste water, and that sort of thing. And it's not that they were built wrong or that government did it wrong. It's that we have new understanding of energy, we have new technologies, and what this bill does is look to looks to save taxpayer money by not wasting energy. And then the last thing is it will pay dividends into the future by having the Department of Energy through this study look at training programs that in terms of not only are we going to do this work, but we're going to look to train Oregon workers to do this work, and that will have long-term effect by training people to do high-wage, high-skill jobs. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about this sort of project. So we hope you can support House Bill 3328 for those reasons. Thank you.
Patrick, how broad is the access to training for these types of skills? What are the different agencies that might provide that training?
There's apprenticeship programs that construction contractors and the building trades run. BOLI certifies scores of apprenticeship programs. So,
both private and public? Are there federal programs?
I am not. I would have to see if Bowley wanted to talk about the extent of the apprenticeship programs, but they are broadly available. Community colleges do apprenticeship programs. Contractors, you know, a famous one is I'm a member of the IBEW, and IBEW Electrical Workers Local 48 has a joint program with the Employer Contractors National, with NECA, National Electrical Contractors Association. So there's lots of access to that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Green?
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on this? Hearing none, I'll close the hearing on House Bill 3328. And seeing no other activity on the schedule, I'll adjourn our meeting. Okay.